What's it going to take to turn the tide in the effort to get more women and girls into the STEM fields? Well, that's the question that's being talked about, debated, researched, and strategized in the workplace, in schools, think tanks, and the halls of power. And we're going to talk about it today on the Kathleen Dunn Program. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn this week. Are we making progress? And if so, how much and where? What still needs to be done? Well, we'll ask those questions. And then later in the hour, we'll hear about some remarkable students and their teachers at Sherwood Hills Elementary School in Madison who helped successfully lobby a major toy manufacturer to produce characters showing women in science. If you want to join the program this hour, here's how you do it. Different phone number this week, 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org is still the email address. And the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page is always a great place to leave a question or a comment. My first guest this hour is Catherine Hill, Vice President of Research for the American Association of University Women, or AAUW, and co-author of the 2010 AAUW report, Why So Few? Women in Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics. Catherine Hill, welcome to the Kathleen Dunn Show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, some old liberal arts majors like myself may find it difficult to swallow, but the STEM fields are where it's at, it seems, in terms of future job growth. As we all know, STEM jobs mostly held by men, and the education system feeding those careers dominated by men. You asked this question in your 2010 report, so let's start there. Why so few women in STEM?
Well, I'll begin by saying, you know, women have made just enormous amount of progress in many fields in the last 50 years. So if you look at medicine, you know, there weren't really very many women doctors when I was a little girl. Today, you know, they're nearly half. You look at law, you look in business, again, you see women have made these enormous gains. And this is something to celebrate. And at the same time, there's certain fields where we're just not seeing that progress. And particularly in engineering and computing. And actually, our upcoming research report, we hope will be out later this year or beginning of next year, looks specifically at computer science and engineering, where we have a lot of jobs, not many women in those jobs. And so we think those are an area where we, you know, we need to pay special attention compared to some of the other fields. But in general, all of the scientific and technological fields have been very slow in growing the number of women in pursuing these fields and attaining success in the field.
So, what did you find in your first research into this that was suggestive in terms of cause for this disparity?
Well, I think that we started by taking a look at the middle school and high school, and what we found was that in fact girls had made a lot of progress in middle school and high school, and girls and boys were about equally likely to take math and science classes in high school, and girls and boys got about the same grades. In fact, girls got even slightly higher grades in those classes. So at the high school level, it looked like we were doing pretty well. Yet, as soon as we went to college, and actually even before we go to college, we see women dropping out. Specifically, when we ask students, what do you want to major in? What are you intending to major in college? We see a dramatic drop-off of women in the sciences, particularly, again, in computing science and engineering, but also somewhat in the other sciences as well. So it's something about this transition between high school and college where we are losing a lot of young women.
But we don't know what that is.
Well, that's where we get to things like stereotype and bias. And I think a lot of people just feel like these things are terms from the past, that they're not as important anymore. But unfortunately, we think they're really important. And we looked at a lot of the experimental evidence about how these really work, in particular the test-taking situation. And what we found is that the stereotype that girls are not as good at math than boys is alive and well, sadly, and that the census is sort of that boys are innately better at math. It's not a question of of working harder at it. It's that there's sort of something about boys that makes them better at this.
But we don't know what that is.
Well, and here's the thing, but we don't see, the stereotype continues despite the lack of evidence. We do see in a few areas, like at the most advanced mathematics, we do see that boys tend to outnumber girls. So looking at, say, the tests where they identify mathematically precocious young people who get at age 13 or getting above 700 on their SATs and in mathematics, and really, you know, the exceptional young people, you do see more boys in math. I'll tell you, but back, looking back to 1982, it used to be 13 boys for every one girl. Today, it's much more like 3 to 1. So what that suggests, two things. One, yes, boys are ahead at the most advanced kinds of math, but we see huge growth and achievement. So this means it's more of a cultural phenomenon than a biological one.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about that culture. First of all, before we get to that, though, what if anything have you noticed that's changed just since your 2010 report came out? I know you've got a report coming out shortly. Mm-hmm. What have you found that's different now in 2014 than in 2010? Have we seen this trend toward more women and girls getting into the STEM fields continue, or has it been arrested, or where are we?
Well, you know, I think in some of the fields where we've made good progress, I'm thinking of not only biology but chemistry, we're continuing to see milestones being reached and women really getting near parity, at least at some levels of the field. And so that's very encouraging, and that's recent. What I would say is that we're not reaching those same kinds of milestones, and we're not seeing any kind of growth in computer science and engineering. So in fields like biology, chemistry, environmental science, yeah, we are seeing growth, we are seeing improvement, and that's all good news. But there are these fields which are in some ways some of the largest in terms of sources of employment. So we're particularly concerned about them, and we're also concerned because, you know, computer scientists and engineers are the ones that make the things around us. And we want to have diversity in those workforces, and that's an issue not only for women themselves, but for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk then about you talked about the culture, and that would have to include our mass media and marketing, because that helps to create what the culture is, or at least the way we think about it. How important is it that we pay attention to things like, there was this T-shirt that says it was for girls. It says, "I'm too pretty to do homework." JCPenney was selling it. They caught a lot of flack for that. But you know, yes, we laugh about it because it's sort of funny, but the underlying message here is one that that we probably need to take seriously, don't you think?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I laughed because I actually hadn't heard that particular expression. But I do think you're right that it's not any one thing. It's that there's so many things. You know, a particular T-shirt or a toy, if that was sort of in isolation, it probably wouldn't have much of an effect. And in fact, when scientists try to reproduce the stereotype threat in a laboratory setting, and if they try to create a false stereotype, so a stereotype that women are, you know, better at basketball than men, okay, that doesn't resonate with people. They can't reinforce it. They can't get they can't just make one up. It has to be something that connects to something you already have seen a million times, something you've already heard. And so that's why these things become so powerful. It's not any one toy or doll. It's all of them put together.
So, I mean, I guess it would be conspiracy theory with a capital C to suggest that there's some vast outfit out here that coordinates all this stuff and does this on purpose. How does this happen? I mean, are we simply just perpetuating the stereotypes of past generations and we're just not paying attention, or is there something else going on here?
I think you make a really good point there. It's not about us or anyone being particularly malicious. Maybe some people are, but that's unusual. For the most part, we have biases. We don't even know we have these biases. And that's something that we've demonstrated in the lab over and over again. You know, there have been a number of recent studies. In fact, I don't know if you saw the study about hurricanes, that female hurricanes were considered to be more deadly because apparently people saw a female name and thought, oh, it can't be quite as severe. It can't be as bad. It's not as powerful as a male hurricane. And of course, we all know there's no difference between female and male hurricanes, but somehow we see when they looked at the records, they found that more people, you know, did not evacuate, did not take some of the other precaution measures, and as a result, sadly, there was more harm and more loss of life.
Hmm.
So people aren't, you know, purposely insisting that, well, I think women can't really be good at math, or I don't think they're really going to be fit for this job. But it's something they may be believing and acting on without realizing it. And what's interesting is when something is in the back of our mind and we're not aware of it, that's actually more problematic than when we can just know, oh, I have this is a bias I have to think about. Let me think about this as I make my decisions. There's a great, I'll recommend something for your listeners. You can go on the web and type in implicit.harvard.edu, and it's an implicit bias game. It's a word association game, and it helps you identify your biases. It's free, and it's also confidential, so you don't have to share it with anyone but yourself.
Implicit.harvard.edu. Okay.
Yeah, I'll do it again. So implicit, I know this sounds funny, but what they mean by implicit is that you're not really conscious of it. It's implicit in your actions, but you're not conscious. So the word implicit dot Harvard, H-A-R-V, you know Harvard. What am I spelling out to you?
V-A-R-D, got it, dot E-D-U.
Yeah, okay. Yes. And I was going to say, too, if you have trouble finding it for some reason, you can go to the AAUW website, and you can actually reach it through our website as well.
Well, and I have no doubt that our crack internet team here at the Kathleen Dunn Show can put a link to the implicit.harvard.edu website on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page post-haste. I strongly recommend it. It's not, you said it's not just one doll. It's not just one T-shirt. There's a whole culture out here. And you know, really, if we look at this in terms of human history, it's been less than the blink of an eye from the time when the assumption was that if a woman went to college, the degree that she was after was an MRS degree.
I thought you were going back even further.
No, I'm only going that far. but, yeah, I mean, even farther. But, or there were more sinister implications. But, I mean, that was the more benign of them. If a woman went to college, that's what she was after. She was looking for a husband. Because why else would a woman be at college? I mean, the cultural assumption was that, well, women just don't have any place there. And now, if you look at the numbers, it seems like more women are going to are getting into higher ed than men.
That's true. It's really shifted. We've seen a large change in our population going to college. You know, back when AAUW started, they thought that higher education would limit women physically, would physically damage women, so it would be harder, they would be unhealthy, they wouldn't be able to have children. So one of our very first research studies was just refuting that somewhat silly myth. But that at the time, I guess that was, you know, men, people believed it. So it was worthwhile doing that, and so we've been sort of trying to debunk stereotypes and mythology around gender for a long time. And you're absolutely right that people saw women as not being true scholars. And I would say today, even in academia, what we see is that when mothers are in academia, they face a special kind of bias. That is, that they're not really serious about their studies, or they're not really serious about their careers, that somehow being a mother is sort of instead of being a scholar, which, of course, it isn't.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, any investigation of major scientific breakthroughs will often find that there was a woman involved who wasn't getting any credit, or whose work was dismissed and then later found to be brilliant when it was rediscovered by a man someplace. And so, you know, we have all of these stories that they're all there. We don't tend to tell them perhaps often enough. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. By the way, the bias test has been posted to the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page, so you can go there and click on the link to implicit.harvard.edu and find out where your implicit biases are. We're talking about how what we need to do to get more women and girls in the STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Catherine Hill is my guest in this portion of the program, Vice President of Research for the American Association of University Women. Later on, we'll be talking about a campaign that got a major toy manufacturer to do something that some people didn't think was possible. And we'll welcome them in and we'll hear about that. And when we come back, Catherine, I know it's not just $1, one T-shirt, but sometimes a dollar, a T-shirt can become a symbol for something else. And when we come back, I want to hear about how we got Barbie to stop saying homework is hard.
I'd love to talk about it.
Okay, well, we'll do that in just a moment. We're going to take a break and welcome some callers at 800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org or on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Kathleen Dunn Show. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen this week. This hour, we're talking about women in the STEM fields. How do we get more of them into it? What progress are we making? What still needs to be done? Later in the hour, we'll talk to a Wisconsin teacher who helped her elementary students to successfully lobby Legos for more female scientist characters. And they'll talk about their experience. We will have not only the teacher, but one of the students will be joining us later in the hour. Right now, though, we're talking with Catherine Hill, Vice President of Research for the American Association of University Women. The Barbie doll that said, the talking Barbie that said, homework is hard. The AAUW was involved in getting Mattel to stop that. Talk a little bit about that and why it was so important.
You know, again, it's about these little things that build on stereotypes. So it was actually math is tough, I believe.
Oh, math is tough. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. No. It was the new Teen Talk Barbie. Now, this is 1992, so it's kind of ancient history for young people today. But that was a big deal, the Teen Talk Barbie. And the first thing that Barbie said, math is tough. We were not pleased. AAUW really wanted to ask Mattel take that phrase out of the computer chip for the doll. And, in fact, we were successful at doing that. I have to just give a quote, Sharon Schuster, who was our president at that time. She said, "We were pleased that Barbie had finally been given a voice, but it is a shame that Mattel didn't give her a more confident one." And the good news of this is that Mattel did, in fact, change the doll. And I think this is kind of a nice segue into your later discussion with some of the work that those wonderful class has done on Legos, which is, by the way, one of my favorite toys to encourage both boys and girls to play with because it builds spatial skills. And that is something that girls tend to lag behind boys when that's the bad news. But the good news is it's very learnable. You can just practice doing it, drawing, playing with building toys, all of this can make a difference in how your spatial skills are. So it's, you know, when you see a deficit, the answer may just be, oh, work a little harder at it.
The teen Barbie thing, though, really goes to show how important context is, because math is tough. It was always tough for me. I hated it. I still do. I mean, I don't like to do math. I don't mind doing arithmetic. That's okay. But I didn't like math. I was awful at it. And I have the ACT scores to prove it. if I said math is tough, okay, math is tough. Big deal. But the context is what made that phrase so effective in a negative way.
That's exactly right. It builds on the stereotype that girls are not as good at math as boys. And so by itself, it's just a statement. It doesn't mean much. But Barbie, of course, was a very important doll in our culture and was widely used and listened to by little girls and middle-aged girls. And so it really did have a stronger impact than, you know, again, it doesn't look like a big problem. It doesn't seem like a big deal, but it does make it. These things add up. They reinforce the other existing fears. So you might think that, okay, math is tough. But if you have a growth mindset, if you really think of, you know, if we can teach girls to think, okay, this is difficult for me, this, and that's fun. I want a challenge, not tough. Oh, I'm going to quit. I can't do this.
Yeah.
And that is one of the things that we talk about a lot in our report is this notion of a growth mindset versus a fixed one. And I don't know if you were anything like me, but when I was a little girl, I thought that, well, fixing that intelligence was really just you had a certain amount and that was it. And so I would, for example, pretend I wouldn't do my homework because I thought, well, I should, if I'm really smart, I should be able to get a good grade without homework. You know, of course, I quickly learned that that wasn't going to happen. But I think that what we want to see is people to look at intelligence as the more I learn, the more I can learn. And so if we can encourage young women and young men to have that attitude towards learning, we're going to see that stereotypes and other kinds of negative biases are not going to have that kind of effect on them because they're going to be able to say, hey, I can keep working at this and make a difference. As opposed to, oh, this is hard, I should quit because I can't do it, I'm stupid.
So what would you say to parents of girls who want to make sure their daughter or daughters have a good shot at a STEM education and possibly a career in that field should they want one?
Great question. I think I'd start with things like spatial skills. Just make sure I provide my daughters with all kinds of toys, including building toys, and encourage things like Legos. I have my own personal gripe with Legos. I'd love to see them not refer to a particular toy as a boy or a girl toy, but just as a toy, because girls and boys may want to play different kinds of toys at different times. So, and, you know, everything that girls like does not need to be pink. So you can share that. I get those students on it. I think they're going to be our champions of the future. But I would really recommend spatial skills, drawing, building. I would also, again, reinforcing this notion of a growth mindset that, you know, mathematics is not, you don't have a gift for math. You have a learned skill. And I think that that's a really important distinction. And frankly, I think our schools could do a better job of, rather than pointing out gifted and talented students, why don't we pay attention and start calling them advanced students, accelerated students? You know, there are lots of terms for that. And I think if you say it's a talent, that makes it something that you don't need to grow or work on. You just have it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have it, you don't have it. So it really is not something we want to see.
Well, it's the old adage, you can teach skill, but you can't teach talent.
That's right. Now, does that mean that there is no talent, there's no difference? Of course there isn't, but I guess it would be sort of a 90-10 on either side. If you think it's almost entirely about your talent or almost entirely about your effort, that doesn't mean that both aren't part of the picture in the end, but you do so much better when you focus on your ability to learn and grow rather than being held back by saying, I'm talented, I won't do homework, and then being somewhat disappointed when you don't get the results you want.
Yeah, the AAUW actually posts a list of recommended toys for parents who want to encourage interest in STEM for their daughters. Could you you've talked in general terms, building sets and things like that, but you've actually got some specific toys on a list of what was published last year. I note that Barbie is now going to Mars, not to keep coming back to that, because there are things that trouble people about Barbie dolls that have nothing to do with STEM. But I noticed that Barbie is now in outer space and doing science stuff. But there are you've got a lot of toys on this list. It's several pages long. Could you talk specifically about some of those for just a moment?
Sure. I can talk to you about the Barbie one. I think that is an interesting question, you know, and we have seen and some studies have found that regardless of what Barbie's occupation is, she still confirms and reinforces female stereotypes and that way kind of is not as strong of a toy as, you know, other kinds of dolls and other kinds of figures. But I think, actually, I have to remember, I'm sorry, that's a little while ago when we made our list, but I can take a look at it. And can you, if you tell me one that you're particularly interested in, and then I'll remember, find our list for us while we're talking.
Well, there was actually, one of the things that I saw was there was also a list called Seven Shirts I'd Like My Daughter to Wear. And there was one, a Marie Curie T-shirt, Love Smart T-shirt, I Am the Future. this is one I kind of liked, glasses, and the wording is Future Librarian. I've got it. The gift guide for girls, and this is a little old. I'm sorry I sprung that on you, but one of the things Google doesn't do is do a very good job of organizing things by dates. You had you go as far as down to ages 0 to 3 with something called the Future Scientist Onesie. I thought that was awfully cute.
Now I have it. The Future Scientist. I think what that does is also remind us to treat all of our kids. We see differences in how people respond to infants. You know, as early. As soon as they're born, and we bring them out and dress them. And if you dress them in girl clothes, there's more about how cute and sweet they look. And if you dress them in boy-type clothes, you see much more of this, you know, how sturdy they are. And so I think it's really interesting how persistent, you know, these stereotypes are. I think a lot of us think that they're already a thing of the past. And when we really scratch the surface, these things are still very much with us.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a call here quickly from La Crosse. Jerry is with us. Jerry, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you. I'm sitting here wondering, you know, if we're talking about the right issue. It just seems to me that men, young men, are having much, much greater difficulties than young women, and that we stand to benefit more by encouraging young men than we do, the society stands to benefit more by encouraging young men than we do by encouraging young women. Young men are in prison many times the rates of young women. Young men are dropping out of high school faster than young women. I don't know what other numbers there are. You probably do, and maybe you could explain.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
Thing,
that we do.
Another thing, just...
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, sorry.
I guess I would slip my mind. Go ahead.
Jerry, thanks for the call.
Yeah, I appreciate the comment. You're absolutely you're right in many ways. Young men are not doing as well. This is in terms of college attendance, for example. That's an important one. I think we know why girls are going to college, and we don't know as well why young men are not making that choice. But I would say that one of the things that we see early on for boys is their verbal skills and their writing skills tend to lag behind girls. And so one of the things that makes sense for us as a culture to pay attention to is building those skills among young men earlier on. And we, you know, this is not anything new. It's actually been true since, you know, we started measuring. You know, boys always slightly outperformed girls in math, and girls outperformed boys in verbal skills. But I think what we're finding is that more of the, if you want to achieve at school, you need to have those writing skills and the verbal skills, the communication skills. So absolutely, we want to see activities for boys. We want to be pursuing this kind of activities, whether it's in school or whether it's out of school.
Jerry, thanks for that call. Wouldn't you say, isn't it fair to say that as a demographic cohort, young people in general are having a tough time of it these days?
Absolutely. And I would say that what we have found in the past, especially in the workforce, is that young women tend to be pretty close to where young men are at the beginning of their careers, but by the end of their careers, they lag considerably. So while I do appreciate that there are many young men who are being badly who need and deserve better educational opportunities. We also note that they are, in fact, doing somewhat better than women still in terms of salary. But I think it's not really, I really don't see this as an either-or. AAUW has never approached this as we have, you know, help for girls and not help for boys. I mean, we are especially interested because of our history and our expertise in these issues of girls in science, technology. But I'll tell you that actually many of the things that we propose that work well for young women in science also increase the number of young men who go into science. So there's a lot of common overlap between how boys and girls learn and young men and young women learn. You know, we've seen that at some of the colleges that are focused, yeah, some of the engineering schools that are really making an effort to recruit young women, they're finding that the same methodology is working for young men.
Well, there are some stereotypes that sort of cross genders a little bit. The nerd stereotype, the geek stereotype, it's not cool to be smart. It's not cool to be intellectual. That's not something you want to pursue if you want to be socially successful. So if you overlay that on top of a situation where women are at a disadvantage already, is there some kind of multiplier effect going on there?
I think that the social peers are very important in how young people make decisions. And too often they are getting really, I guess I'm going to call them retro beliefs or stereotypes or things that really should, we think, are gone, and yet they seem to somehow, you know, come back up. You know, sort of these stereotypes about, you know, if you're smart, you're not going to be kind of socially graceful, you're not going to be able to connect well with others. I think now we know more about intelligence and how that works. That's less of an issue, but I think that you're right that does happen. I think it's really, you know, there are ways in which young women and young men have a lot in common, and they have some differences. And I think what our work focuses on is, you know, really an historical underrepresentation of women in science and technology.
Well, let me ask a question that maybe seemed to come out of left field, as so many of my questions seem to do. Have you, you are familiar with the situation comedy, The Big Bang Theory. I'd like to get your thoughts on that program.
I think that, there are some stereotypes of the techie guys. There's a lot of what I would call, this isn't specific to this show, but it's just for that stereotype. There's a lot of peer education where peers are helping each other succeed in this area. And so it's kind of a young boys network, I would say, where it's harder for young women to find their way in.
Mm. But you also have depicted women who are scientists, one of whom is terrifically successful financially and working for some unnamed large company, and another one successful in an academic career. And then you have the ditzy blonde stereotype and the awkward nerd geek kind of thing going on. But it's pretty clear that they're making fun of that stereotype. And yet, it's, you know, with a wink and a nod, but, you know, it's still there.
Yeah, that absolutely. I think, you know, there are fields that, in general, we see that young men are less excited about college, and it's not altogether obvious why. When we survey them, they say things like, "I can't afford it," which is true of everybody. So we don't know, really what specifically is pulling them back. I think there may be a sense of more of opportunities that they believe are out there, that they don't need a college degree, to a greater extent than young women feel that. But I think it's an ongoing area for research and for attention, because we do know that across the board, you know, having a college degree really does have a lot to do with your economic opportunities.
Well, I don't mean to go down a rabbit trail here, but it's getting to be kind of a tough sell when you say, listen, come and spend 4 to 6 years going to this university, go about $40,000 or $50,000 into debt, and when you get all done, you'll have a great chance to be an unemployed degree holder.
Yeah, you know, I think that. That there is some level, we are obviously, as an organization, we promote education, and we think education does a lot of good things, and we all agree with that. But you're right. At some point, the cost is not going to be worth it. There's not an infinite amount of money you should spend on your education. So I think that's one of the challenges as a country, where we find a way to it just appears to be that young men might be somewhat more cost sensitive.
Mm. I still have my receipt from my first semester at college where the tuition was $250. Let's take a quick call. Yeah, that tells you how old I am. Let's take a quick call from Carol in Oak Creek. Carol, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering what your guests would think about separating girls and boys into various study groups for math and science, particularly at the high school level, so they're not distracted by the opposite sex. I have a master's in engineering, and I know, you know, when I'd walk into a study group full of men, the room would just fall silent. So I was wondering what your guests would think about separating the two sexes and to encourage them, you know, in math and science.
That's a wonderful question. I think that there is some merit in separating young men and some young women at some points of the school day to do a particular activity, whether it's to get away from these stereotype threats, right, where we think that the boys are going to be better at computing, so I'll let them take over the main seat, or, you know, something like being just distracted by one another. So I think that there's room for that, and I think that, we want to encourage co-ed experiences as well, because ultimately the workforce is co-ed, and it makes sense that we learn to work together. That's part of what we do at school. But I think the caller brings a valid point that there are times and places when we do need to, there are times when it makes sense to separate girls and boys.
Mm-hmm. Carol, thanks so much. Thanks so much for that call. 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join the program. You're listening to the Kathleen Dunn program today. John Munson in for Kathleen. Catherine Hill is my guest. We're talking about efforts to encourage more women into the STEM fields, to make it possible for them to be there. AAUW, American Association of University Women, been around for quite a while. What progress are you seeing at the faculty level at these institutes of higher learning? What progress are you seeing in getting more women in the front of the classroom as the professors, as the instructors, as the graduate advisors? Clearly, if people have examples like that to look at, it might encourage more people to be involved in the STEM fields. But what kind of progress are we making there? Because I know there's been a real scarcity in the past of women in the faculty of the science department.
Pipeline is nearly full in most fields. That is, there are plenty of women getting their doctorate degrees. Now, less so in our two, you know, fields I've been mentioning a lot today, engineering and computer science. There we have fewer women getting doctorates. So, yes, we also see fewer assistant professors, full professors. What we see in terms of the classroom is, of course, we've had this historic change. We used to have mostly tenured faculty at universities and colleges, and today we have mostly adjunct faculty who are a very different population. Women are a majority of adjunct faculty, and those professors are not around. They're paid very little. They're paid by the class. They're not there as research faculty, and they're not there to be sort of mentors for the students in the same way. And I think that's been a real loss as we've gone from more of a tenure faculty workforce to a workforce that's more adjuncts.
Adjunct or academic staff, that kind of thing. And maybe one step away from some other system that, I don't know, pays by the hour. It's certainly a completely different world than when I first taught at a university back in 1984. We're going to take a break. We're having some difficulty reaching our next guest. Catherine, I hope you can stick around with us for a little bit. Otherwise, I'm going to have to sing.
Sure.
That wouldn't work out well for anyone. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll see who's with us and who isn't and like that. It's live radio, ladies and gentlemen. These things happen. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen. A reminder, you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, though, it's the Kathleen Dunn Show. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. We're talking about ways to get more women and girls into STEM fields, not just at the career level, but even getting young children, small children, even preschoolers interested in science and technology. We live in a world that's dominated by technology, which is changing at an ever increasing rate. We're talking about how to try to get more people into the sciences. Catherine Hill has been our guest, Vice President of Research for the American Association of University Women. And Catherine, thanks for sticking around with us. It appears that we have our teacher on the line. We're just deciding how we're going to make the technology work here. The engineers are working furiously behind the scenes. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. And we expect to have our next guest with us shortly. But Catherine, thank you so much for being my guest this afternoon and for filling us in on what we need to do in the macro sense to make some of these things happen. I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much.
All right. And do we have, looks like we do. I'm going to go ahead and introduce our next guest. We're talking about women and girls getting into the STEM fields this hour. For the rest of our time today, we're going to talk about how students at a Madison elementary school successfully lobbied a major manufacturer, the manufacturer of Legos, to provide more characters showing women in science. Michelle Hatchell is an art and social studies teacher at Shorewood Hills Elementary School in Madison. Michelle, welcome to the Kathleen Dunn Show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
Well, you're an art and social studies teacher at Shorewood Hills, and so how did you get in on this whole STEM thing?
Well, I have a long time interest in STEM, which actually we call STEAM because we have the A in there for art, too.
Ah, good call.
So I was a science major initially and then became an artist and elementary art teacher. And the way we started this year is we've been using curriculum from Welcoming Schools and Gender Spectrum. And one of the focuses is running a gender expansive, gender inclusive school that gives room for all kids to fully learn and become themselves. So that's been a very intentional focus in our building. So this year, one of our projects for gender was to study gender marketing in the toy industry, and we chose Lego as the product to study.
Okay, so how do you get from, we're going to study Legos, to getting involved in trying to convince the makers of Legos to add women in more diverse roles to their cast of characters?
So what happened is the children were given the assignment. Well, first of all, we studied Lego ads through time. There's some lovely videos and sites with those. And then the children's assignment was to design a Lego set that was gender and culturally inclusive. And then the classroom teachers had the children write persuasive letters to Lego, saying what they liked, but also giving suggestions. And then what happened is the kids noticed the gender imbalance in the minifigures. So my job as a teacher is to get kids to ask the questions. So I said, well, let's find out. And so a group of five kids went and they started looking through 600 Lego sets and gathering data to find out if there was indeed an inequity and what the percentages were. And then at the same time, another group started noticing the lack of diversity in the skin tones with Lego, because they do have a few characters with skin tones, but they are primarily yellow, so they address the cultural piece. Mm-hmm. And that is the journey we've been on here. And then one of our fifth graders, when we studied the ads, we looked at that 1981 ad where Lego was being more gender inclusive, and she had the idea of photographing the students in our school in that ad, because we have kids from all over the world. They speak 44 languages. And a third grader said, diversity is perfect, and why don't we show them that? So that's how it started. And then we did the project, we put up the website, and we sent it to Lego.
And do you have one of your students there with you today?
I do.
Okay. Why don't we put her on? Olivia Vassallo, is that?
Olivia Vassallo. She's a fifth grader, and she just graduated, and so I'm going to pass the phone to her.
All right.
Thank you.
No problem.
Hi.
Hi, Olivia. Thank you for being on the radio with me today.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, you just graduated from fifth grade at Sherwood Hills Elementary School, so congratulations on that. What was it like? Talk about what it was like for you and your classmates to work on persuading this huge company to start showing women and girls as scientists, for example. What was that like for you?
Well, it was a lot of fun, and it's really fun to kind of be that. It's really fun to, like, have everybody kind of learn how to, like, find their voice and how to figure out that there always is a way to make change, and how we, me and my friends, like, we had a ton of fun because, you know, it's always cool to kind of just like push it out there and like wait for a response. It was a lot of fun.
Well, ultimately, you were successful. We're going to see some changes in Lego characters. How did you find out that they had agreed with your assessment of their toy and they thought they should make a change? How did you find that out? And then I imagine there was a pretty big celebration when you did find out.
Yes, it was a lot of fun, and we were sitting in class and Ms. Hatchell, she said, she's like, so we got a response, and we were all so excited, and we were so happy, and we couldn't really contain our excitement. It was really, really awesome to hear that they listened, and we could clearly tell that they read through our stuff, and that they knew that they looked through it all, and they saw that we've been trying really hard to make the things equal, and yeah.
Well, having conquered Legos, what's next? What do you have some other project in mind that you're going to take on next, or are you going to rest on your laurels for a little bit?
Well, actually, we've just been talking about that lately. We're thinking about how Lego has really kind of like had a reality check on the gender piece, and so now we're going to try to get them to figure out the cultural piece, because I'll tell you, Sherwood is a very diversified school. We have a bunch of, I have friends of every skin color, and like everybody is just all friends, and it's really great. So we're going to try to focus on that next and see where we can get.
Wow. Well, that's really exciting. And actually, it's encouraging to an old geezer like myself. That young people like you are working so hard on issues like this. Could you put Michelle back on for just a moment? I wanted to ask her one more question before we run out of time here.
Yeah, totally. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Olivia. Really appreciate it.
Hi,
Michelle. Wow, Olivia is just an amazing individual. What a pleasure to talk to her. The system that the school system that you're in, obviously encourages this kind of thing. How important is that?
It's very important, and our school district, we're one of four pilot schools that are really focusing in on this. Another big piece of it is we are training children to be allies, and a big piece of that is that we all notice differences, but we are working on being in a space where we do the pause and we notice differences, we accept them, and then we move on to celebrating them. So we're, particularly at our school, we are in a really good space for this kind of deep learning.
Wow, well, look out, world. This is amazing.
These leaders are coming.
What an uplifting story. Thank you. We're out of time, but thank you so much for spending a little bit of it with us today.
Oh, well, thank you.
Michelle Hatchell is an art and social studies teacher at Sherwood Hills Elementary in Madison. Olivia Visalo is a student just graduated from fifth grade in that school. This program was produced by, K.P. Whaley and by Judith Sears-Poisson. We had on-air production help from Jennifer Dargan and Dave Potratz. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.